Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, May 24th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, a new generation of community bankers, Jamie Bartholomew Aller and Andrew Bartholomew of the National Bank of Malvern, join me to talk about how to find the best local bank for you. We've got young people all around the world encouraging us to move our bank accounts. However, if we're going to do that, we need a new generation of young banking leaders welcoming us and helping us rebuild our financial futures. So tonight you're in for a special treat because you're going to meet two members of that next generation. Jamie and Andrew are the fifth generation in their family to help lead the National Bank of Malvern in Malvern, Pennsylvania. My theme tonight is that alignment is possible. At the heart of making money work for us is realigning our incentive systems so that we make money from helping each other succeed instead of helping each other fail. One of the reasons it's so valuable to get to know and bank with the excellent community bankers, particularly in your area, is that they have a rich understanding of the people, of the land, the culture, and the economy in your place. Because your bank is so important to it's the heart of your financial train tracks, connecting with those people who have that experience and intention is an important step to building your family wealth. Money and markets. What a week. Let's start with this Eurozone, because if you look at the pricings of everything around the world, what's happening in the Eurozone is probably the most critical element. The Greek government, big questions about whether there's going to be a default and a withdrawal from the euro. And if they withdraw, will it be messy rather than managed? The serious concern is growing. Elections are coming up in June. The government says it will be out of cash by the end of the June. The European banks are doing asset sales, and it's not just because of the current issues over debt. They still are not even close to capital standards requirements coming up, so it's a bit of a double whammy. We see a report on the blog from Dealbook that investors have raised $76 billion to buy European bank assets. My guess is that there are going to be some real crown gems in real estate passing hands. Another question I have is, did that cash come from the Facebook offering? I'll bet you a chunk of it did, and it will be a very smart trade indeed. So watch some important assets changing hands. It's just the beginning. The U.S. dollar index took off this week, climbing above 82. If we do get a Greek default or a messy exit, watch it go as high as 87 to 89. If that happens, there's going to be a very big and important realignment between dollar-centric assets and the emerging markets, particularly emerging markets equities. Look for a real change in pricings. Check out on the blog, there's a chart that the PBC made on Eurozone debt, who owes what to whom. It'll help you understand the liabilities of the different banking systems in the different countries. As the Eurozone negotiations go on, we're watching a stall in the global economy. It's making coordinating global policies that much harder. We have an unbelievable number of meetings. Everybody on the Mr. Global side seems to be getting together. We had the G8 meet in Maryland, May 18th to 19th. The president coming out and announcing that their program was pro-growth while cutting debt. Not sure how you do both of those things. NATO, the meeting was in Chicago, May 15th to 21. We talked last week about how Putin pulled a no-show. Big discussions over the missile shield, which, of course, is very controversial with Russia. The Eurozone, with everybody hurting for money, doesn't want to fund updates of anything for NATO, and certainly not the missile shield that is as controversial as it is with Russia. So big stall there and talk of pulling out of Afghanistan. We have the Bilderbergers meeting in Chantilly, Virginia, May 31st to June 3rd, then G20 coming up on June 18th to 19th in Los Cabos. The Bohemian Grove will probably be the big one this year. It's July outside in San Francisco, especially in a presidential year. Probably the most critical right now is the June schedule for the central banks. The big question, of course, is how much stimulus will they inject into the economy, and my guess is it will not be insubstantial. You have Operation Twist running out at the end of June and an election year, so if the Fed is going to inject, June is probably the time to do it, or towards the end of June. continued reports and discussion about the slowdown in the Chinese economy, a big question, will there be stimulus there as well? And, of course, that's on top of what's happening in Japan. Fitch rating service dropped its rating as low, much lower. And we, of course, have the big question of what is going on at Fukushima. I put up another link on that discussion, and more questions. Can I find somebody reliable to talk about it? I continue to look, but am not satisfied that I found the right person. The Middle East, we have negotiations with Iran and six of the eight members of G8, ending 2 days of very difficult talks with Iran about the nuclear program. They're going to meet again on June 18th and 19th in Russia. You can see this is building up to a long, slow, hot summer. The U.S. economy, very interesting website that maps out traffic in the United States, and I find traffic to be quite a good indicator of how the economy is doing. What you can see is, except for places with strong energy or tech industries, a lot of economies around the country are down. I know the closest metropolitan area to me, Memphis, is down, I think, about 31% last month. So very, really underscoring a slowdown. Wall Street Journal had a very good piece on manufacturing. I didn't post it on the blog since it was subscriber only, but what was interesting is they pointed out two things. One is that they don't expect this revival in manufacturing to produce new employment. I think that's true. And not one word or mention of the low price of gas. And again, if you haven't listened to the latest Jim Norman interview that we did last month, I strongly recommend it. It was excellent for understanding what's happening in the U.S. economy, particularly in manufacturing. If this kind of stall keeps up, Obama could be in real trouble. At the same time, Romney's record on employment issues is about as bad as it can get. So all of this is going to make for an interesting election. One of the things that's been remarkable this week is the silence on J.P. Morgan Chase and their trading position. My guess is that position is a real overhang in the markets, and the silence, if anything, probably reflects the fact that there's real trouble and the Feds are being careful on what they do and say. Equity markets, both equity markets and commodities markets, are showing a lot of weakness. Chances are good for major corrections in the equity markets or a spike in the dollar, making foreign equities much more attractive than they are right now. Again, European assets and equities way down, which is why I said a trade out of Facebook and into prime European real estate would be a very attractive switch. So again, look for Operation Twist ending in June and the Fed to do something. Facebook, I was dead wrong. This is a prediction. I said the Facebook offering would probably move all the way up to a double. I was dead wrong. We've got quite a mess in the market, and this is one I love being wrong on. O'Brien's law says that Murphy was an optimist. Murphy was the guy who said if anything can possibly go wrong, it will. And that's what we're watching on the Facebook offering. The initial pricing was at 23 to 25. They repriced at 38. Up the offering. The price ran up to 42. Now it was down to 32 today. I didn't look at the close. It's the largest IPO in history, 100 billion plus, but it's quite a mess. You have the Massachusetts Security Division already subpoenaing analysts who apparently changed their projections during the offering, but only shared that information with selective investors. A pretty bad situation. If it's true, lawsuits against lead underwriter Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs already. NASDAQ, turns out, couldn't handle the size of the deal, and there were real problems in the immediate trading in the aftermarket. Now the New York Stock Exchange is pitching Facebook on moving the listing to the New York Stock Exchange, and we have reports tonight up at Yahoo Finance that the Facebook market makers have to date lost $100 million. So, like the J.P. Morgan trading loss, it makes Wall Street look like it's not competent, which at this point in time is not a good look. Food and health. There is an amazing report on the USDA organic standards. It's called the Organic Watergate article, up on the blog. If you're interested in food and organic standards, it's very important, and it will give you extraordinary amount of more background on why I say it's much more important to have fresh local food from somebody you know and trust than to depend on the USDA organic standards. You clearly can't. science and technology, continuing interesting comment on the privacy issues of cell phones and smartphones. IBM, who should know, has now outlawed the use of Siri voice recognition systems on employees' iPhones and smartphones. They're concerned about what data could be scarfed up and where it would go into the cloud. It's a very interesting story to read. It's up on the blog. And finally, in wild cards, there is a very interesting thing. As you know, I don't watch TV, but I was at the gym this week. And from the treadmill, my question was, is the U.S. Navy sending us a message? The Men in Black 3 movie got released this week. I was watching the morning interviews while at the gym, and Will Smith was giving an interview on the USS Intrepid in New York as part of the launch. And we had scores of actors dressed as Men in Black standing on the deck of the Intrepid, integrated into a large number of Navy personnel in dress uniform. Hacker Gary McKinnon claimed when he hacked into the Navy systems at the Pentagon that he found records of space Starfleets run by the Navy, and I was sitting in the gym watching this and thinking, is the Navy trying to tell us on morning TV that Gary was telling the truth? Our hero this week is Nick Hanauer, a wonderful venture capitalist who was an early investor in Amazon. He did a talk in TED on inequality that is posted in the blog. It's in a commentary. He tries to blow up the lie that rich people don't create jobs. Apparently, TED censored it and finally just released it under pressure. And it's quite worth watching. He gives a beautiful description of how consumers create jobs, and I would say it's not just consumers but citizens who pay taxes create jobs, and that there's a virtuous circle back and forth between consumers and businesses, and it's really how jobs are created, and it's a beautiful description of how real wealth really does get built. Okay, ask Catherine quickly two questions. We have one posted on the blog. The buzz of a recession in China is getting louder. Here's a question no other analyst in the gold community seems willing to touch. Could this have a big impact on the price of gold? My answer is yes. It's a serious concern, not just because of the impact that China would have in terms of Chinese buying, but on the, if you look at the flows as they work through both the currency and trade markets, could be, have a dramatic impact across the board on all equity and commodities pricing. And so it's something we'll talk about in the precious metals market report in June. Then a recommendation for a soil expert in microbiology, Dr. Ingram of Soil Food Web. Thanks for the recommendation. I agree that soil is very important. I've ordered both of her books. Okay, that's it for Money and Markets and Ask Catherine. And now we're going to turn to our topic of the evening, how do I find a great local bank? And, of course, you know me, I want to start with a story. In 2006, I was banking in Tennessee at a very fine local community bank. And then I started Solaria Investment Advisory Services, and I decided to add my cousin's bank, National Bank of Malvern, which is run by my cousin Lydia Willits Bartholomew in Malvern, Pennsylvania. Lydia and I are both the great-granddaughters of Frank Willits, who was, believe it or not, a farmer and a former Secretary of Agriculture of Pennsylvania. And after working with the National Bank of Malvern for a year or so, the person who was running our books at the time came to me and said, as we were starting the Solaria report and the business activity was going up, would it be possible to close down our other accounts in Tennessee and just do business with the National Bank of Malvern because their customer service was so excellent? And so we did. We canceled all of our other accounts and just started banking with the National Bank of Malvern. So Solaria and Solaria Investment Advisory Services and me. And then several years ago, I started to come and spend time in Pennsylvania in part because I wanted to learn more and know more about community banking, and what an education I've gotten. It's been quite an experience. One of the bank's greatest strengths is that the next generation of the family is in the bank. Jamie and her brother Andrew, who are joining us tonight, both graduated from college and graduate school and got the kind of big corporate jobs that everybody dreams of. Jamie went to a big-name law firm in New York on Wall Street. Andrew joined one of the largest consulting firms, and yet after proving themselves in that world, and I assure you they are the best and the brightest, they could do very well if they wanted in that world, They chose instead to return to the National Bank of Malvern as the fifth generation to serve as officers and directors of the bank. So they're my bankers, and I've been visiting with them for the last few weeks, and I can assure you that National Bank of Malvern is hopping as a result of their presence. As the bank president, Jim Fusco, said to me today as he was bouncing by in the stairs, he said, "This is how life is supposed to be." So with that, let me introduce Jamie and Andrew. Jamie, are you with us? Andrew?
I am, yes. Catherine?
Yep.
Andrew? Okay, so let's start with an introduction. Jamie, if you could walk us through a history of the bank and tell us a little bit about how it feels to be the fifth generation.
Absolutely. So the National Bank of Malvern, which is based in Malvern, Pennsylvania, was founded in April of 1884. And it was originally founded to provide the local farmers in the area with a place to deposit the money that they made from the sale of their crops in Philadelphia. And at the time, Malvern was very rural, and the bank was strategically located next to the train station so that when the farmers returned to Malvern from a day of sales in Philadelphia, they could deposit their money at the bank. My great-great-grandfather was one of the founders of the bank. My great-grandfather served as the bank's cashier. My grandmother and great-uncle ran the bank through the end of the 21st century, and my mother is currently chairman of the board. My brother Andrew and I currently serve on the board of directors, and I act as the bank's general counsel. So since 1884, the bank and its surrounding area have experienced great change, but we continue to operate with the purpose of serving the greater Malvern community. And our goal is to develop deep and lasting relationships with our customers that last years, if not generations. As a closely held, non-publicly listed bank, we are able to focus on what is right for our customers in the long term, as opposed to sort of squeezing fees out of them or pushing products that are not really well suited for them in order to make money in the short term. We aim to do what is right for the customer because in the long term, the bank's success and our customer's success go hand in hand. As for your question about how it feels to be the fifth generation, it feels great and maybe a bit scary. I feel like I have very large shoes to fill. My ancestors worked very hard to make the bank what it is today, and I want to uphold that legacy of providing personal, customized solutions and responses to all of our customers' financial needs for generations to come.
They are big shoes, I must say. I followed your mother around in the community, and it's pretty amazing to watch how much she loves and understands this area. Okay, so let's say I'm listening tonight, and I know a lot of subscribers like this. They say, "Oh, you know, I hate my bank, and I should really switch, but it just seems overwhelming. It's such a big job to figure out what to find the National Bank of Malvern where I live, and to switch my bank account." So I'm sitting in this predicament. How do I find a great local bank? Walk me through the steps of what I should do to do that.
Okay, Catherine, well, you would start out by finding a list of community banks in your area. You can often find a list from the local Chamber of Commerce, or the Yellow Pages is also a good starting point. Most states also have a community banking association, which is a terrific place to find community banks in your area. The second step, I would say, would be getting information about the banks so you can sort of sort through them. Looking into, the leadership of the bank. The websites of most banks will speak to the bank's leadership team, and if the bank is publicly listed, the information would be on the SEC's website, which also includes other interesting information which may indicate where a bank's priorities lie. Secondly, you want to look at the financial health of the institution because you don't want to take your money to a bank that's sort of struggling or eventually fails, because that sort of could be maybe a nightmare in and of itself. Most banks make available financial statements in some form or another in their lobby or on their website or in some other publicly available form that they produce. At the National Bank of Malvern, we keep a copy of our financial statements in the lobby at all times, although our financials are quite strong. The banks are also
Has anybody ever just Jamie, let me just ask you, does anybody ever walk in and ask you for your financial statements?
We have people asking for it. Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Quite frequently, actually. So we always have that on hand. And then, and also sort of maybe not known to everyone is that banks are required to file quarterly financial reports, which are called call reports. And they can be found on the Federal Financial Institutions Exam Council, or FFIEC's website, which is FFIEC.gov. And there's another useful report that you can also get off of the FFIEC website. It's called the Uniform Bank Performance Report. And that enables you to compare the banks that you're looking at with their peer group. So you can look at sort of how the banks kind of stack up next to each other. And while these reports are relatively long and complex, there's a few key factors that you want to consider. Firstly, you want to look at the bank's net income. Obviously, you want your bank to be making money. UBPR also shows a bank's data over time and relative to its peer, so you can see whether net income is increasing or decreasing and sort of how it stacks up against its peers. I think another kind of critical thing you want to review is the total assets of the bank. Our bank has approximately $135 million, and I would say that as a bank grows, often the pressure on it to sort of streamline and create efficiencies may reduce the bank's ability to personalize service and truly know its customers. It's the difference between the corner hardware store and Home Depot. Another factor you'd want to look at when you're reviewing the financial reports is Tier 1 leverage capital, which is the bank's capital, and that's sort of what's there to absorb any losses that the bank experiences. And it should be at least 10%. Our Tier 1 leverage capital is about 14.5%, which is considered very strong. Finally, another important factor you want to review is loan losses. Obviously, high loan losses are not good. And looking at the ratios against peers is also quite useful here. You know, sort of in a tougher economic climate, you know, all banks might have some loan losses, but, you know, how are they doing relative to their peers? Another thing you want to consider when looking for a local bank is, you know, its location as well as its services. So once you have identified a short list of banks, you know, based on finding the list, looking at the financials, you can either visit the main office or go onto the bank's website to read more about their locations and the services that they offer. And I think really one of the most critical things in finding a community bank is referrals. The National Bank of Malvern does virtually no marketing or advertising. And I would say about 99.9% of our new customers come to us through referrals from happy existing customers. When looking to find a new community bank, by all means talk to your friends and neighbors and ask them where they bank and whether they are happy there. Finally, well, I guess not quite finally, but another step that I recommend in finding a community bank is visiting the bank. And you can typically just walk into a bank and meet with somebody to discuss your banking needs and feel out whether the bank is a good fit for you. You can also call to make an appointment if you prefer, although typically a drop-in is perfectly acceptable. And you might want to, while you're there on your visit, you might want to find out how the bank is involved in the local community. Supporting a bank that supports the local community is, in my view, an essential quality of any community bank. When meeting with a bank, you know, you can ask, do they support the local businesses and do they lend locally? A community bank's deposits typically come almost exclusively from the community in which they operate. So the need to give back to that community by using the funds on deposit to lend them to the small businesses, getting them off the ground, you know, sticking with them through the good and bad times, you know, helping people buy their first homes and sticking with them through the good and bad times. For me, community banking is about developing long-term relationships with customers that continue for generations. And finally, I think, you know, when you go into that community bank, you want to feel whether this is a bank where you feel like you could develop personal relationships. At the National Bank of Malvern, there are almost no customers that walk through the door that we don't know on a first-name basis. And I think one of the most valuable and important aspects of a community bank is those personal relationships. You want to feel comfortable discussing with your banker anything financial that may arise in your life. And to do so, you need to know them, and they need to know you.
You know, it's funny, you go down to the floor of National Bank of Malvern and your mom's on the floor, her office is there, and the president, Jim Fuskus, is on the floor, and then your aunt, Barbara Shipp, is on the floor, and no customer walks in who isn't greeted and known by the senior membership of the bank and, more importantly, decision makers. And it's, I don't know, if I guess you guys have never known what it's like to walk into the branch of a really big bank and try and get a decision. But at a community bank, and certainly a National Bank of Malvern, you're dealing with decision makers and people who can make decisions or get the decision makers quickly.
Exactly.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about switching accounts. Tell us about switching accounts. Should I have more than one bank? Should I wait to close my old account? How do I build the relationship?
Well, as far as should you have more than one bank, I would say it depends on your specific needs. In general, community banks can provide you everything that you should need. If you need to hold funds in other currencies, for example, or you have other kind of sophisticated, more international needs, it may be a good idea to have a second bank in which you have some money as well. But I would say, in general, community banks offer much more than you may think and can satisfy most people's financial needs. For example, even at our size, we have a trust department, we have trust services, we have, you know, all the standard deposit products, we have online banking, we have bill pay, we have, you know, ATM and debit cards that can work around the world. So I think, like I said, most people tend to be surprised about what community banks offer, and that really they are pretty comprehensive for almost everyone. And as far as closing out your account with your old bank, I would say that it takes some time. If you pay bills online in particular, you have to update your bank routing number and account number for any bills for your old checking account. So I would recommend leaving your old account open with some money in it until you have fully transitioned all of your sort of online bill accounts to the new account number. And actually, you know, even if you sort of wait a month, you might see new bills that are being paid out of the old account that you forgot about, you know, your cell phone bill, your electric bill, your water bill, depending on how much you use the online bill pay. But once you've transitioned everything over, you know, which may take a month or two, just to make sure you have everything under the new account, then you could close out the old account at that point. I would be careful to just leave enough money in there, because sometimes banks will charge you fees if you drop below certain balances.
Now, how do I build my relationship? If I change banks, how do I go about really getting to be known at the bank and building a relationship?
Well, I would recommend starting out by going to the bank and introducing yourself and inquiring about the services that they offer. I would say trust your instincts. You will know whether you click with the bank or not, and often that initial instinct is lead you correctly. We get to know most of our customers through interacting with them when they come into the bank to make deposits and withdrawals, you know, apply for a loan, or they may call on the telephone. And I would say building a relationship, any relationship, of course, also takes time. But we are always very interested in what is going on in the community. So don't be shy to sit down and share with your banker how your business is doing. Ask questions and let us know what's going on in your world. Being open about both the ups and downs in your finances will not only provide you an opportunity for your bank to get to know you better, but it may also enable the bank to provide you with better financial solutions. We had someone that came in today and sort of, you know, gave us a scenario about how, you know, he's had trouble running a property, and should he, you know, refinance it and try to take out more money? Should he sell it? Should he? And we were able to sort of work through a solution with him on that, which actually didn't end up involving us at all. But again, sort of, I think the longer-term approach that that our bank takes, and I think a lot of community banks take, is sort of this relationship that you want to carry with you for years. So it's not about giving him a loan tomorrow and, you know, getting a point on it. It's about, we want him to be a customer here in 30 years, and we want to do what's right for him so that he does well, and therefore we subsequently do well.
I've noticed two things. One is, when I first started to get interested in community banking, and I was doing a lot of traveling, so I was meeting community bankers around the country, what I discovered is that there is an extraordinary amount of knowledge about the local economy, and they really can, in a lending situation, help a small business get smarter. And, you know, it's not just about making a loan, but it's about bringing that intelligence to bear. And I think, you know, I think it's also, it's often underlooked the extraordinary amount of intelligence they have about the place and the economy and how everybody fits into it. Because they're dealing with all the different aspects of the economy, and certainly I see that as I watch, you know, as I tool around with your mother around Chester County and watch, you know, her knowledge of the place is just phenomenal. The other thing I wanted to mention because of what you said is I have found with my clients and subscribers, someone will ask me to look at the financials. They'll say, you know, I'm not a financial person, and I've looked at these 10 banks, and I've culled it down to these three. Would you look at the financials? And so I'll do, you know, I'll look at their financial statements in depth and look at all the sort of technical information available. And then they'll just walk in and say hi and walk around. And what's amazing is that their intuition almost always matches up exactly with what I'm saying, you know, what I'm getting from the financial statements. And if the bank is strong, you can feel it in the sort of confidence in the people and how outgoing they are. And there's a real matchup, and so don't underestimate your intuition and, you know, whether you feel comfortable with the people and whether you match up in terms of philosophy and value, because I've found that intuition is really a very good indicator of whether that bank is right for you or not.
I absolutely agree with you, Catherine. I think that's a great point.
Well, you have to. You're my gym partner. Okay, so let's turn to products and services, and Andrew is going to help walk us through there. Andrew, Jamie, one of the things Jamie had said is when you're looking for a good bank, you want to walk through, you want to understand the services that are available and the fees that they charge. So maybe if you could start to walk us through the products and services that one can expect from a community bank and how they work and what the fees are and how somebody walking in as a new customer should think about them and look at them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the great things about the products we offer is that they're simplistic. There's not a lot of hidden fees. It's kind of, you know, what you see is what you get. I mean, for the first one, the checking account, there's a minimum deposit of $100. If you fall underneath that $100, there's an $8 fee, monthly fee until the balance is brought back over the $100. There's check writing capabilities out of there. There's internet banking. You can attach your ATM card to it. But it's really, you know, just a basic checking product. And there's other things. The money market accounts offer you a very good interest rate, an interest rate depending on, you know, what your balance is. There's a minimum balance of $2,500 for one of the products, and there's a minimum balance of $50,000 for the other money market product. And if you have over $50,000, you can get a rate of over 0.5%, which is, in my opinion, a pretty incredible rate. It's along the lines of what a 12-month CD would be. And you have access, you have liquidity. In the money market account, there is check writing. You can only write six checks a month. So there is, you know, a restraint on your check writing ability. But it's a really good product. We just had a huge municipality bring a large account in that product, and it's just if you look at other banks, especially the bigger banks, you're not even going to see you know those type of rates. We do offer much better rates than the larger banks. Just an example, I was at a branch of a large bank a few weeks ago, and they had certificate of deposit rates, and they were only offering one certificate of deposit, and it was for a 14-month period, which was just bizarre to me because you don't really find many people who need a 14-month CD. It's usually a 6, 12, 24, 36 type product. So it was obvious that they were kind of just offering what would be beneficial to them opposed to what the customer needed. And that was a 14-month CD, and I think it was at a 0.4% rate of return. So it was just the rate of return was even horrible. I guess the third one here is online banking. Yeah, the online banking's great. You can go to our website if you're signed up for it. You can access all your accounts. You can see your loans. You can transfer in between accounts. You can set up bill pay through the online banking. So it's just a really, it's just a really good tool to manage kind of your money if you don't necessarily go into the bank all the time.
I've found that many people assume that community banks won't have online banking, or that they won't be able to do the things that they can do at the big banks. And for the most part, I would say most community banks have online banking.
Yeah, for us it's pretty standard. We've had it for quite a few years. We're actually in the process of making a pretty large capital investment in enhancing that feature as well. It's only getting better. It's just a good way to access your information if you really don't go into the bank all the time.
Uh-huh.
And there's also, different apps that the large banks have where you can sort of gain access to your bank through an application on a phone, which we're sort of tooling with that idea. But you can always, if you do have a mobile or a smartphone, just go on the internet browser. You can go to the website, type in your username and password, and access your information that way as well. So debit cards and ATM cards, yeah, we offer those on any checking account. It's a Visa debit card. It's nothing flashy, just kind of, your debit function or your credit function. We don't actually offer credit cards. So for that need, you would have to go to a different institution. It's really not the business we're in, so that's kind of why we stay away from it.
Will testify because I have used your debit card all over the world, and I have, I've been in many different countries in all of 50 states, and I have never found a place that I couldn't use my debit card. So it's
it's just a Visa, basically just a Visa check card. It's accepted everywhere around the world. You can go abroad and really have no issues at all. It probably would behoove you to call the bank and let the bank know that you are going abroad or if you're going to be using it in a location that sort of we're not as familiar with because there is a fraud protection element to it that would sort of let us know if there's some unusual activity on the account. So,
right.
It's accepted everywhere. So savings accounts, just a standard product. Currently, our savings accounts are paying a 0.25% interest rate with a minimum balance of $25. You're typically going to see minimum balances of $250 and above for savings accounts that pay nowhere close to a 0.25% rate at this time in the market. So it's just a good way to sort of park your money in an account, get a risk-free rate of return on it. And so the savings accounts are very popular products as well. And then the CDs, which are, we offer a 6-month, a 12-month, an 18-month, a 24-month, a 36-month, 48, and 60. And we actually just started an 84-month. So you have a lot of options. It's not just kind of, where the bank is looking for its particular funding needs. It kind of allows the customer to pick and choose what fits them and, how it would, would help them to benefit financially from whichever product they're interested in.
And Andrew, in current market, where's most of the money now? Where does the market want to be in terms of maturity?
Well, obviously it's on the short end of the curve. if you look at the, I mean, for example, the 60-month CD is yielding at 1.74. It's kind of just the rate that we're at right now. So people are tending to go a little bit shorter on the curve.
Right.
But it is an attractive rate if you're willing to take that, duration risk of the 5 years to hold that. But, yeah, a lot of money is short term.
I was getting 18% in 1980, so it doesn't look as good to me.
that's not going to match up there. So the CD products are really good. It's a really good way to safely invest money. If you keep it below the $250,000 mark, you're fully insured, so there's literally no risk to lose your money at all. Even if the bank happened to go under, you would still get reimbursed through the FDIC insurance. So depending on your situation, it could be very beneficial.
How does a depositor or a family maximize the amount of FDIC insurance they can use?
Well, it used to be, before 2008, $100,000. You were insured up to $100,000. But now, after the 2008 fiasco, you can actually get unlimited FDIC insurance on any non-interest-bearing product. So if you're in a checking account and say you had $1 million in that checking account, right, as of right now, that's fully insured.
As long as you don't get interest.
But you don't get interest.
Right.
So if you have, for one individual, you have up to $250,000. If it's a husband and a wife, you have up to $500,000 of insurance.
Okay. And then you can add unlimited on top of that as long as it's a non-interest-bearing account.
Correct.
Okay.
So,
And, Catherine, I'll just jump in.
You can always go to another bank to get that, extended insurance if that's, what you need as well.
Jamie, sorry. Go ahead. Jamie, jump in.
I was just going to refer you, if you go onto the FDIC's website, it provides, very specific guidance as to the different types of accounts. And then, I think the idea is generally that, depending on the account type, to an individual, to a joint owner, an IRA, if it's a revocable trust, if it's a non-revocable trust, the rules are quite specific. So I would definitely direct any listeners that are interested in more about that to the FDIC website, because you can kind of go on for pages and pages about sort of very specific rules and exceptions. But I think Andrew kind of touched on the highest level.
Yeah, it can get very, very complex. So especially, if you have a family with lots of different interests and trusts, it can get very, very complex.
Right, or even you have companies and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess that moves. Any other questions for FDIC insurance there, Catherine?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Mortgages, auto loans, consumer credit. Pretty standard lending products, mortgages, lines of credit, car loans, pretty much whatever lending need you would have, we can kind of fulfill, or as a community bank. Depending on the size of the community bank, the only limitation would be sort of the amount of the loan. We typically don't like to go over, for example, $2 million. Other institutions that might be a bit larger could be comfortable with going, higher than that. But as a rule of thumb, we kind of, like to keep the loan balances, under a $2 million sort of level. That would be really your only if you were to want to go over that could be an issue. But, we're very competitive with rates. None of the community banks typically, well, at least for us, we do hold a lot of our, commercial residential mortgages on the books. So our rates tend to be a little bit higher than the other big banks, but you also have to look at the whole picture and look at the CD rates, and there's a lot of other stuff that we can provide that sort of sets a higher mortgage rate or you know, whatever it may be. But
the other thing I can tell you,
it's still very competitive rates. Jamie, I don't know if you wanna add anything to that.
Sure, I will just add that. So we also do commercial loans, I guess Andrew mentioned. I would say on the commercial side, we're very competitive. We don't sell any of our loans. We hold them all on our books. So we don't go in on any on the secondary market, in particular to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which have sort of a government subsidy. But I think the sort of trade-off is, you know your loan will be with us for the life of your loan, and you know in 5 years when you have a problem, you can call me and we'll talk about it and we'll figure it out. I think one of the wonderful things that I've learned through the past couple years is how great it is that we hold our loans on our banks. Because we've had some customers, long-term customers, that have struggled. And, rather than, once the loan hit 90 days, moving forward to foreclosure, we said, no, we know they have equity in the property. We know they're going to get there. And in some cases, we held off for even years. And then the people managed to get back on their feet, bring the loan current. And to me, that's such a success story, rather than, after 90 days, the axe comes down and we're taking the property back. I think being able to sort of control the loans in our portfolio and sort of what happens to them, I think is critical and is a wonderful part of working at a community bank, being able to actually help people and work through them, through their problems, and sort of back to the idea of a long-term relationship. And when you're in a long-term relationship with someone, you stick with them during their hard times, they stick with you during, their good times, and I think it's really to everyone's benefit in the end.
It's amazing. When I first got to Tennessee, I did my first mortgage with a community bank. It was a wonderful experience, no problems. And then the second mortgage was securitized, and it has been absolutely a nightmare. And when I tell you, the loan has been current the whole way through. It's been transferred. The servicing has been transferred over 6 times. Every time it transfers, they make a ton of mistakes. And if you look at the cost of my attorney and my bookkeeper in just managing all the mistakes they make and all the problems we have, it's much more expensive. That subsidy comes with a sock in the jaw, I can assure you. So I'm with you. I think if you can do your mortgage with somebody who knows you, who holds it on balance sheet, there's an incredible advantage to it. More on that you wanted to say, Andrew, or should we go to IRAs?
Well, yeah, I was just going to move on to IRAs. I'm not as familiar with the IRA product, but, from what I understand, we can roll in existing IRAs into a fixed rate IRA product that basically just pays a fixed rate throughout the term of the IRA. There's a 6 month, 12 month, 18 month, and 24 month IRA periods. But it's a pretty straightforward product.
I've had a series of investors, and I had never seen this before. Before I did Solari Investment Advisor, who will have IRAs in a variety of different places. Whether it's in self-directed assets or it's in brokerage accounts, and when they're ready to withdraw, they'll move, or they want to hold big cash positions, they'll move it into an IRA with a bank, a lot of times a community bank, and use their, park their cash in a fixed deposit with the bank, and that's where they keep the money that they anticipate withdrawing over the next year or two. And it's a very interesting use of that vehicle, and for people who want to get the FDIC insurance and get 1 or 2 or a few years of cash ahead for withdrawals, it makes tremendous sense.
Right. Jamie, this isn't the IRA that's going to, decline 50% in value when the market goes down.
Right.
You're going to have that protection. And the IRAs currently yield the same rates as the CDs, so it is a very competitive product as well.
Jamie, I know you've looked at the IRAs. Any comments on them?
At the National Bank of Malvern or sort of more generally?
At the National Bank, either one.
I would say more generally, IRAs, having money in an IRA account kind of tends to depend on where you are in life, what your risk profile is, and you know, what your goals are. So, you know, sometimes younger people will have money in more in the market because, you know, to the extent that the value of your IRA account drops, then, you know, you have 40 years to recover. Although I think you were sharing with me earlier how your experience has been that you've seen younger people putting their money more in cash because they've been sort of disenchanted by what's happened with the market.
Right.
I think the National Bank of Malvern, we have some IRA customers. I think that's actually a product that we're looking to develop farther just because, you know, we offer competitive rates and we have, because we're a very high-touch bank, we tend to have a bit of an older clientele. And as our clientele grows older, you know, they have more money in savings and retirement. And so I do think that's something that's very attractive for us as well as for the customers putting their deposits here. One thing I would just highlight is that I would say in general, rates at community banks are higher than rates you're going to see at bigger banks. So every month in our asset liability committee meeting, we look at what is the rate of our bank for various products versus the rate of other local community banks versus the rate of, you know, the big national banks. And we don't even really compare ourselves to the national banks because their rates are always so much lower than the other kind of community banks in the area. And I think it's sort of counterintuitive. You might think that because they're so big, they'd have economies of scale and therefore, you know, they'd be able to give you better rates. But I think because they have such extensive branch networks, that's quite costly and therefore you sort of pay for the branch networks through lower yield on pretty much any type of your deposit account.
Okay, so if I'm looking for a new bank and I walk into a bank, is it fine for me to just sit down and walk through all these different categories and ask them about their services and their fees? That's
absolutely
fine.
And I think that that'll give you a great sense of whether this is a bank for you or not. You know, if they sort of hustle you along and don't take the time to explain everything to you carefully and answer all of your questions, you know, then that's you want to know that sooner rather than later. And I think, like I said, meeting with a couple banks, I think you'll really get a feel of which one seems right for you.
Like I said,
it kind of comes back to the relationship. And, you know, to the extent we have a new customer coming in the door, that's a new relationship we're looking to build. And they're looking to build with us. So you're not really in a hurry with the people you're trying to build relationships with, are you?
Okay, so let me ask you and Andrew, what's ahead for you as community bankers?
I can answer first. I would say that looking ahead, I think we're looking at how to strike a balance between offering sort of personal service and relationship banking while enabling our customers to access their accounts electronically in more and more mediums. So internet banking, mobile banking, remote capture, and a lot of community banking is about these personal relationships. But as the world becomes more electronic and online, I think sometimes personal interactions are reduced. So I think our goal looking forward is to stay current with the new technologies to sort of enable our customers to get connected in every way that they can and every way that they desire, while continuing to offer outstanding service to customers that do want to pick up the phone or come in and talk to somebody who can actually help them when they have a problem. So sort of that balance between technology and maintaining that sort of personal relationship with your customers.
Andrew, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I agree, Jamie. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's, you know, it's really a mix between keeping up with the current technology, but not losing that, you know, the fundamental, you know, banking principles of knowing your customer and, you know, really getting to know them and caring what happens. But also, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, some large capital expenditures on, you know, enhancing internet banking and making sure that we are competitive with, you know, the other banks that are out there.
Okay.
One other thing, Catherine, I'll mention, a little bit of a darker note, is just sort of the balance between kind of compliance and the regulatory burden and continuing to serve our clients, because certainly, you know, everyone is aware of all the recent financial regulations that have been passed and sort of all the financial regulations that are to come. And so as a small community bank, you sort of have to keep up with all of those while continuing to be able to focus on your customers and, you know, serve their needs. So that's also sort of a balancing act. We've actually been very fortunate. I think we've done really well with all the recent stuff from the Dodd-Frank Act. Our regulator, the Office of Comptroller of Currency, which regulates national banks, has always been sort of the tough regulator. But they have sort of forced us to keep on top of everything, which is positive.
Well, I just realized that we have a ton of questions that have come in on the web software, so I wanted to take some extra minutes here and just go through them. Okay, so we'll try you out. Any comments about a CDARS account to be covered by FDIC for amounts greater than $250K?
I'm sorry, what type of account was that?
It's CDARS. Do you know what CDARS is? It's CEEDARS. Is that what you call something that is not interest-bearing?
I'm so sorry. I'm actually not familiar with that type of account. But
well,
if you, I don't know. Andrew, are you familiar with it?
I am not.
No, go to the FDIC website. A question about rating services. What do you think of the rating services? And I have a comment on that, but I'll let you go first.
Do you mean the rating
like rating
services,
of like
the bank? Yeah, the bank rating
services. Moody's?
No, you've got the Weiss ratings. You've got there are a couple of different services that specialize in rating banks, soundness and
okay.
Security.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. I would answer that I think they're okay, but I would say I would want to really look at the data myself firsthand by actually going on to the FDIC website and looking at the financials. I think that sometimes, I mean, it depends on the rating service, but, and I know in the law this is certainly the case, that sort of if you contribute or if you subscribe, then usually they, you know, you sort of get more outstanding reviews, and there are probably some that are objective, and of those, I would say I think that's probably a good starting point, but I would also want to do my own firsthand analysis.
I would say, because I've used them a lot, I find them to be relatively good in about 50% of the cases and then wildly wrong in about 50% of the cases, either, you know, making it look much better than it is or much worse. You know, So I've seen a bank which I think is as good as it gets, you know, rated terribly.
So
I think they have to be very, very careful. And I use some of those things just to do initial screens to see if I see banks in that area that they list. But I'm with you. I think it's very important to dig into the financials yourself. Or if you don't feel comfortable doing it, have your accountant or lawyer or someone you know who's, you know, who can dig in, take a look at the ones you think you like from the meetings, et cetera. Somebody points out you're near Vanguard.
We are near Vanguard. Yes, they're also in Malvern.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are our trust custodian. They hold all of our trust accounts.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. And then a question. If you have significant assets, don't you think it would be prudent to have several banks and or bank accounts outside the U.S.?
Can you repeat that question once more?
I would say, me personally, I would say yes, definitely.
It's interesting because I like having assets in many different jurisdictions, but I am guilty of only having one bank and very happy doing it. So, but I have special reasons to do so. Okay, and then finally, somebody quickly asked which smartphone replaced my iPhone. I replaced my iPhone with a BlackBerry. And then we have a couple more questions on the Eurozone that we'll talk about in the next Solari report. Okay, so that's it for questions. Now, let's just to wrap up, let's talk about, let's say we have a subscriber and they do the search and they find a bank and they go through and they build a relationship and it's successful. What does that picture, let's just give them a picture of what that looks down the road 2, 3, 4, 5 years, Andrew. What do you think?
It's basically coming into the bank, seeing somebody that you're familiar with, getting to, you know, talking with them, getting to know them, being able to care about each other and then growing with each other. It's really, you know, being able to walk in, see somebody you're very comfortable with that you know is going to give you, you know, an objective, non-biased opinion on you know, whatever questions you have. So it's really just to get to know each other and grow with each other and, you know, try to be successful.
It's funny, when I sit in the lobby and I watch people come in who've been banking at the bank for a long time, it's so funny to see the look on people's face who love their bankers and think of their banker as somebody who's in their corner trying to help them succeed. It's a remarkable thing to watch, and as Jim Fusca says, you know, this is how life is supposed to be. So before we end, I just want to brag about one new development. And Jamie gave me permission, and she is my my gym partner when I'm in this area. We go to Planet Fitness in the morning. And I would just like to say that one of the developments we're all really excited about here is it turns out we're about to have a sixth generation of community bankers. Right, Jamie?
Exactly, yes.
Jamie and her husband, Stephen, are expecting our sixth generation, so we're very excited about that.
You're very sweet, Catherine. Thank you.
Well, you know something? It is a pleasure to have you guys as my bankers, and I can't thank you enough for doing the Solaria Report with me this evening.
And well, thank you for hiring us. This has been such a treat.
Catherine.
I appreciate it. Yeah? Okay, that's it. So, that's it for this evening, how to find and evaluate a good local bank. We'll have the transcript up next week on the blog post. The audio will be up tomorrow. And again, the links from the blog post will take you to the checklist on how to find a good local bank. And I think this, you know, just going through the steps is really what you need to do, and anybody can do it. Okay, in closing, next Solaria Report, June 7th, Makako Tamariz from the Damahir Eco Village in northern Italy will be joining us. She served as the president of the European chapter of GEN, which is the Global Eco Village Network, and is very knowledgeable about eco villages. What are they? Why they're growing? It's a fast-growing network around the world with lots of very interesting and creative people. And so she'll be joining us on June 7th. Then June 14th, precious metals, a lot going on the markets, a lot to talk about. Franklin and I are going to be joined by my partner at C-Lane, Chuck Gibson, to respond to numerous questions we've gotten on hedging precious metals positions. What are the options? What are the pros and cons of the various options? So tomorrow starts Memorial Day weekend. We hope you have a wonderful, fun-filled weekend this holiday weekend. And until June 7th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.